We're going to talk about movie franchises for about half an hour. So if you just want to hear us talk about Bloody Mama, just skip about half an hour into the episode. Hello, listeners. Buckle up. We've got an episode about the 1970 film Bloody Mama. I'm Jordan, as always, joined by Alex.
Buckle up.
Buckle up. It's going to be an ordeal. I don't want to give too much away, but...
Before we talk about the movie, I had a bit of a topic of discussion that I wanted to bring up that I regrettably didn't think about as much as I thought I would. But I hope you've thought about it, because it's something that we've spoken about, I think, already once or twice recently. But I keep thinking about this in my spare time because it's been such a big deal with the Avengers lately. And obviously, we've got the Solo movie coming out. And my provoking topic of discussion today is, what are the pros and cons of big franchise films like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, DC, Star Wars, Harry Potter, Jurassic Park, etc.? Is it healthy? Are the best possible stories and movies being made? What are your thoughts on this, Jordan? Because I know we've spoken about it, but I wanted to have a bit more of a debate about it and sort of think about what's good and bad, because it doesn't seem like any of this is going away. I think Hollywood is pretty obsessed with these big budget franchise escapades.
Well, let me start by saying that I have seen Avengers Infinity War 3 times at the cinema.
3. So you've spent about $60 on seeing that movie, right?
No, I spent my Village Rewards points on one of my tickets, and the first time I saw it, I had a cheap ticket. So I haven't spent all that much money on it, thank goodness. But I loved it. And what I loved about it was that it was just, you could just get straight into it. You didn't have to worry about setting up the characters. You didn't have to worry about character arcs even. It was all about the problem at hand in the movie, trying to solve it. And that's impossible without the world building that they have done. I think similarly for just your normal franchise, where, you know, it's like a saga of some sort, where you don't, by the third film or whatever, you don't need to introduce your characters. You know who they are. And so you can just tell the best story possible for the characters that you know without having to set it up. That's why the most recent Spider-Man, for instance, I think is the best, because they don't have to say, oh, I got bit by a spider, now I have powers. It's like, no, we know who this guy is. Go. So that's one thing that I think franchises are really good for. They can tell stories on a much bigger long form, in a much bigger long form way than just your average film, which has to set up who these people are and why should I give a damn. What about you? What do you think?
I think having not seen the Marvel movies, I do trust you, and I think that's a really good point. And it makes me think about, remind me, the original Batman and 1989 Batman, does that have much of a backstory for Batman, or does it kind of jump into it?
You do see Bruce Wayne's parents getting, spoilers, killed.
What? Really? They get killed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a whole big thing. He becomes a bat. It's crazy.
He turns into a bat.
Yeah, you do see it.
Like a man bat.
Like man bat, yeah. Like the famous Batman villain.
But it's only like, it's kind of like what? Like the first scene. It's like a 5-minute thing, right? Because my point that I'm going to say is, especially since, I'm going to say probably since the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, there was this trend for a long time of origins being like a huge, and it was always, you know, the first movie was always going to be about the origin. And I, you know, even with Batman Begins and all that kind of stuff, there's these, you know, big, long, we have to tell the origin story. And every time they rebooted something, it was like, oh, we're going to have to watch him get bitten by a spider again, or we're going to have to do this or that.
We're going to have to see Bruce Wayne's parents get killed again.
Again, yeah.
Have you seen that supercut on the internet?
No.
It's every single, Bruce, what are their names? Thomas Wayne, Thomas and Martha Wayne getting shot in the alley scene across many mediums happening all at once. There's so many.
Aw, poor guys. Poor guys. But yeah, so that was a big trend for a while. And I do agree with you. I think it's good to maybe leave that behind and just say, you know, we know these characters. We can just do this. So I think, and I think we spoke about this, I think, two episodes ago when we first spoke about Infinity War. I think we can agree that Marvel is possibly doing quite a good job and it seems to be working for them. And I think part of the problem is that because it's doing so well for Marvel, Disney Marvel, I think this trend has followed on to other franchises. So, for instance, Star Wars, Jurassic Park, Harry Potter, how do you think it is affecting those franchises? Is it a positive influence, a negative influence?
Well, I think it sort of depends on how much work the studios are willing to put in. If you want to see, you know, Infinity War success, and they made $1 billion in 11 days, the fastest that's ever happened. If you're wanting Jesus that kind of number, Christ, you have to put in 10 years of work. And that's why DC isn't getting that, is because they wanted to put in 2 years of work. Whereas the Marvel movies that came out in 2010 and 11 didn't make all that much money. Of course, they were box office successes by you know, any measure, but they weren't making this ridiculous, stupid amount of money. Then they've had to work up to it. Someone like Star Wars, where they've got a legacy, and The Force Awakens was up until Infinity War the fastest $1 billion at the box office ever made in 12 days. A franchise like that has the advantage of coming with an inbuilt fan base. Something like Harry Potter, the books made people read again in the late 90s, early 2000s. And something like the Jurassic World films, again, there's the nostalgia factor. New franchises, and I'm going to include DC in this, because they're trying to build their world over just the last few years. New franchises have their work cut out for them, I think. Like you saw that Mummy reboot with Tom Cruise, that was supposed to be part of a Monsters universe, Universal, the Dark Universe, and it was going to be looking at the Universal characters from old Hollywood, you know, like the Invisible Man and Frankenstein's monster and Jekyll and Hyde. And was going to make a universe out of them. The Mummy did very poorly, partly because they tried to set up that universe in the film, and they've put it on hold. Another really interesting two examples of franchises are Mission Impossible, because the sixth one of that is coming out soon. I went and saw the fifth one when that came out a couple years ago, and it was so much fun. I was blown away. I didn't see Ghost Protocol. The last one I had seen was probably Mission Impossible 3 with Philip Seymour Hoffman on the television, you know, with ads and everything. But I went and watched the fifth one. It was bonkers fun. And another example is The Fast and the Furious. And that's an example of a franchise evolving. That started with just drag races, right? Oh, who's going to do the fastest lap? Whatever, but now it's let's save the world from a nuclear explosion and jump out of a plane in our cars, and then we'll dive into the river and, you know, whatever it is. And that's an example of, for better or worse, a franchise reading the terrain and evolving. New franchises, how many can you think of that have started up new franchises recently?
None, really. I didn't even know about this Dark Universe thing. And this Dark Universe thing, I'm just looking at it now, sounds exactly like let's try and cash in on this Marvel model that didn't work. It sounds exactly like that. And yeah, you're 100% right. Fast and Furious carved its own way. Marvel carved its own way out. I think Harry Potter is being interesting because I think Harry Potter obviously, you know, one of the original big franchises that, you know, in the last 20 years that we, you know, Harry Potter is one of the big ones. And it was a franchise of movies, because it sort of had to be. It was 7 books. They made 8 movies. Good job. But what I respect about them is for the follow-ups, they've gone and said, okay, we're going to tell a pretty different story with Fantastic Beasts, which I still haven't seen, but, you know, they've gone, not, doesn't matter that they've gone back or forward in time, they've kind of gone and done a new thing inside the universe, not just kind of, you know, yeah. Oh, let's just do another movie with Harry or another movie with, you know what I mean? They've kind of, and I like how they've done that. Part of what I'm worried about is I think that even though Star Wars is its own thing, I think that Star Wars may try and do a little bit too much of the Marvel thing and it might not work for them.
Mm. And we sort of have to hope that that doesn't happen with Star Wars. And Solo comes out very soon. And there's been so much talk about what's happened behind the scenes on that movie. And it'll be interesting to see whether the studio's vision, you know, versus the director's vision, whether it was Lord and Miller or Ron Howard's visions, whether that aligns to make a cohesive, good Star Wars picture. Like, because Rogue One was fraught with similar issues, and I didn't think that was particularly good.
No, unfortunately not.
But some people loved it.
Do you think that something like Star Wars should be, instead of reusing characters and stuff like that, they should be maybe making new stories, focusing on new things like Harry Potter is?
It's difficult because with Star Wars, there's obviously the extensive, you know, extended universe that has been sort of retconned with these new films. So they could just make up new characters, and it sounds like Rian Johnson is going to be doing a new trilogy, and it'll be interesting to see if that will include characters we know or just be its separate thing. I don't know. It's difficult with something like Star Wars. See how Han Solo worked. Like, Rogue One obviously was a time period we knew in the franchise, but characters we didn't necessarily know. Whereas Han Solo is directly, let's recast the characters you know and tell you an origin story. I think that's where it could pass or fail, is the recasting and the retelling characters we know at a point before we met them. Like, if there was a Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan movie set in between the prequels and the original trilogy, I think people would be much more open to that because we already know his portrayal of the character.
Is bound to happen. That one's bound to happen, I think. I think even Ewan wants that to happen.
I think so.
What do you think about the kind of, in terms of creative point of view, this is something that I've been thinking about is, you know, when Star Wars was originally made, It was new. It was, let's, you know, there's no rules. We kind of, he had a bit of an outline of how he wanted it to be. He made Star Wars. When the original, the Dark Knight trilogy was made, it was kind of like, you know, I'm going to make 3 movies, tell this Batman story, blah, blah, blah.
The way I want, yeah.
Harry Potter films. Yeah. What do you think of the sort of way that the studios are now, you know, DC, Marvel, even Star Wars, they're planning so far ahead, all these different movies. Do you think that impacts negatively on the creativity side of it? Because from my point of view, I feel like it would be better and less stressful and more refreshing if they, instead of saying, you know, we're going to do these 10 movies over the next 5 years, just kind of take it a bit more on a case-by-case basis, if that makes sense, and just kind of wait and see what happens, or just do it a little bit less orchestrated, because that's what a part of the thing that worries me is, that it's all planned for us as a consumer far ahead into the future, and I don't yeah. like that way of thinking.
And also, you know, specifically with Marvel, sometimes a character will die or something, or and then, but you'll know that actor has already been cast in an upcoming sequel, so it that does color the way you watch the film. Mm. So there's that aspect to it in terms of the planning ahead. In terms of creatively, like Edgar Wright was going to do Ant-Man, for instance, and then ended up leaving. And I think that was probably because he'd been attached to that film for like 10 years. They finally got around to making it, but he had to probably fit into, well, we want to, you know, make sure that Ant-Man is in a position where he could join these heroes in the next film or at the end of this movie or whatever. And that must be frustrating because you, even though you can make the sort of film and the tone of film you want and tell the story that you want, you still have some sort of guideline, like, you know, that you have to fit into. And that's why in terms of other franchises, like you look at, I say franchise, but I'm talking about trilogies, something like Back to the Future. That first one was like open-ended enough that there could be a sequel. And obviously there were the two that they filmed back to back, but they didn't intend for there to be a sequel with Back to the Future. Yes. It just happened.
And Back to the Future is a good example of what I'm talking about where, you know, they were kind of like, here's an idea, here's a we're going to make this movie, you know, yeah, leave it open and whatever. And then, yes, it was so popular that they said, okay, we're going to make two more. And I suppose that was slightly a bit more planned out as they went on to make the next two. But I guess my point is, you know, they weren't saying we're going to make a Back to the Future now, then a sequel, then a third one, then we're going to go and tell the origin of the Doctor. And like, you know, they didn't have that mentality back then, I think, no. with these franchises. And I mean, I think the Back to the Future trilogy is nearly flawless. I can watch that, all three of those. The third one's maybe not the best one, but I can watch them all.
But it's its own whenever. Thing, like, as yes, well. It's yes. not like just a rehash of the first two. Another example would be the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise.
Ah, that's true, yes.
The first one came out in 2003. It did very well. They gave it a subtitle just in case. They sort of didn't lead into a sequel. And then, of course, they filmed 2 and 3 back-to-back and released them in 2006 and 2007. And then, you know, they made heaps of money at the box office, heaps. And then after 2006, the next one didn't come out till 2011. And then the one after that didn't come out till 2017. Hypothetically, what that means is that they looked at the success and they thought, okay, we've got another story to tell. We've waited long enough and we feel like we've got a good story to tell. However, I've seen the 4th and 5th Pirates movie, and I can tell you they didn't have a good story to tell. I can tell you that with the greatest confidence. And so that's an example of perhaps a format of, let's just see how this one goes before we make the next one. But it didn't work for them. So maybe the planning ahead can be a good thing. You know, you never know.
Sure, yeah, because at the end of the day, a franchise is a franchise, and you do want it to, I guess, maybe be cohesive, or you want it to have a bit of an outline. It's interesting. It's interesting because it's just, you know, it's funny how there's all these different universes now that we kind of inhabit in the film world, you know, in these different ways. And it's interesting to see how they're unfolding, interesting to see what's working, what's not working, interesting to see how I think Marvel really has set this standard now, and it's a part of it's just kind of, you know, we want to try and make a lot of money at the box office. It's interesting. And then you got other examples like the Terminator franchise, which they seem to – apparently there's going to be another reboot soon because they went back and did one with Emilia Clarke and Arnie again, and that apparently flopped. I never saw that one. They try and revisit a lot of stuff. And Pirates of the Caribbean is interesting because they're not really revisiting, they're just kind of continuing it. But you're right, they're sort of taking their time. Are they planning to do a new one?
Honestly, I don't think that they will after the last one, unless they reboot it with the younger characters that they introduced.
I think that they could have... Maybe it was just never going to work, but who wouldn't want to see 5-10 movies of Jack Sparrow Maybe that character just runs out after three movies. Maybe that's the problem.
Watch the fifth one and tell me if you want to see that performance again, because I don't.
Well, because I remember I watched the fourth one, didn't I? With Keith
on Stranger Tides with Penelope Cruz in it.
Yeah, I think I watched that one. I thought that was all right.
It was fine. It wasn't great. Whereas this last one had great bits, but was mainly just shocking. And honestly, most of the flaws with the film with it, the Captain Jack character, which was nominated for an Oscar the first time, was just sort of this bumbling idiot, but not in the way where he's actually really smart underneath. Yeah, now he's just an actual drunken sleaze bag, sort of fucking rum, what? And he'll anyway, I could talk about this for so long, everything wrong with that fifth movie, but let's just say, you don't want a sixth one. You don't.
And that is sad. And you know what will probably happen? They'll probably, in 10 years' time, they'll probably reboot it completely with different actors.
Quite possibly.
Which, you know, I think that's a bit annoying as well, that they tend to do that kind of thing quite often. Well, we're not sure what's going to happen with movie franchises, but We're watching. I think I will watch the Marvel movies. I think I will at some point. Maybe soon. Maybe by the end of the year, maybe I'll be all caught up. And I'll be ready for Infinity War Part 2. And then I'll go watch it at the cinema with you. And I'll cry and have a heart attack. And I'll be like every other normal person in the world that I'm trying to not be like.
Well, I took Trell to see Infinity War the third time I saw it. And in preparation, I'd already actually spoiled the plot to her and everything because she hadn't seen many of them and she didn't want to see it. But I talked about it so much and I said, look, if you want to come, because I want to go this day that I'm supposed to be seeing you, if you want to go, I'll pay for your ticket, I said. And so she's like, all right.
What a gentleman.
Well, because it was something she didn't really want to do. But then she's like, okay, if I'm going to do this, show me three or so of the movies beforehand. So the two, like, so one day I showed her the first two Captain America movies because I thought that she would enjoy the first Captain America, and I was going to show her the third Captain America and the third Thor movie to catch her up. She did see Black Panther already. And then she got invested in Captain America, so I showed her the sequel. Anyway, what I'm saying is she watched five Marvel movies in 2 days, and she thought they were pretty good, I think, overall. So you can do it. You can do it.
You can do it. You can do it. I can do it.
You can catch up. There's only there'll only be 20 of them by the end of this year, so.
Is there another one coming out this year?
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which looks pretty good.
Well, look, I think I'm going to do it. I think, like I said, I guess what's happening is the nerd in me is just saying, you need to just catch up and be a nerd about it.
It's fun. It really is.
Because I ended up being a nerd about the X-Men stuff after Murray Law got me into it. So I think I can do it. I think I can do it. It feels good to nerd out over stuff.
And it's nice to be part of like a movement, you know, to be part of this event that has happened, you know.
Maybe I'm having FOMO. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm having FOMO about this all. Maybe that's the problem. And maybe I should just admit to that.
Yeah, well, that was my thing with Game of Thrones. And then I caught up after, you know, four seasons or whatever it was. And that was all right. But that was a lot of time, too, to watch all of those episodes.
Do you feel good now being up to date on that, or do you regret it?
A bit of both. Because now I'm invested in a show that's arguably gone downhill since I started watching it.
I mean, you know, this is another conversation. I mean, I think Game of Thrones is going to become a franchise that we'll never stop hearing about as well. But I think Game of Thrones is interesting because it was the first time, maybe Lord of the Rings did this as well, but I think Game of Thrones did it even more. It was the first time that people who didn't have any business enjoying fantasy were telling me to watch fantasy. So I remember people at school in 2011 who wouldn't even know what a dwarf is or something like that. They were like, watch Game of Thrones. And I was like, you can't tell me to watch fantasy. I'm a fantasy guy. But they were right. And it was a cultural phenomenon. And I think I wouldn't say it's gone downhill. I think it's just, it suffers from what a lot of TV shows suffer from, which is the problem of actually finishing it because they get so caught up in the vehicle that is driving down the road with all these plots and stories and characters. And then at some point they all need to get off the car or the bus and have an end to their story. And it's really, really hard to do. Not everyone can be The Sopranos, Jordan.
Well, do you also think that this sudden yet gradual resurgence of television and long-form storytelling has influenced cinema? Whereas we used to be happy with, you know, oh, this one movie, Blade Runner, what a great movie, but there's only one of them. But now, of course, it's got a sequel. Or something like, oh, this trilogy of movies, and we stopped at a trilogy. Great. But because we're sort of getting used to long format storytelling, we don't mind 7 or 8 movies in a franchise now. Ice Age has 5 movies in that franchise.
And I think this is because, you know, you're right. We're getting into long form storytelling. Binging is so much more of a thing because it used to be, especially in the 80s or 70s. I mean, it used to be impossible to binge movies. It wasn't until VHS, the first proper popular home movie medium. That's when you could start watching things at home selectively. And even throughout the 90s, 2000s with DVDs, I mean, people were binging things back then. I remember speaking about Video Easy, which we spoke about last week. I remember when I rented season after season all of the Friends DVDs. And it was like day after day. I think it was on the holiday. It took me a couple months to watch all of them, but that's how I watched Friends for the first time.
Yeah.
I think I would rent, and then if they didn't have it, I'd like convince my parents to buy me one of them. And then I ended up getting all of them on DVD in the end. And I mean, I loved that show for ages. I think I watched it like 3 times from start to finish. But now the point is it's easier to binge because something like Netflix forces you to binge because it plays the next episode before the credits are even fucking over. And you're like, oh, I'm watching something else. Oh. And you're right. I think that TV shows like The Sopranos, The Wire, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, there was this period of time in the early 2000s where these TV shows were stealing the limelight of cinema. And now it's kind of gone back into the cinema world in a funny way where they're doing, you know, big franchises, long-form storytelling. And that's also coming then back into TV because then we're getting supplementary TV shows to some of this stuff as well, like, you know, the Marvel stuff.
Yeah, true.
It's just a whole wide world of nerdy stuff, isn't it, Jordan?
It certainly is. And the last thing I want to say about franchises or like delayed sequels is that Aardman have announced that they're going to do a Chicken Run sequel. We don't need a Chicken Run sequel. That film is perfect.
Wow. That film is good. We showed that the other day. I didn't watch it, but I got excited about it.
What are they going to do? Cast current day Mel Gibson again? Like, not a fan. Don't do it. Don't just leave Chicken Run.
The other argument is, and then we'll talk about our movie today, Bloody Mama. The other argument is, you know, just the rehashing and rebooting all the time. I mean, it's tricky because, you know, sometimes it works. Like Mad Max Fury Road, amazing movie.
Yeah.
Blade Runner 2049, amazing movie. Alien Covenant, piece of shit. So it's kind of like, it's tricky because it's hard to say we shouldn't be rebooting or doing long sequels. I mean, you know, Blade Runner 2049 is a sequel basically 30 years later. It's a crazy amount of time to make a sequel, but it worked. So, you know, it's hard to say we shouldn't do sequels or reboots, but I kind of want to say that we shouldn't because I don't like the idea of it. Like you said, Chicken Run, why do we need to be doing a Chicken Run sequel? That's dumb. But it could be fucking fantastic, couldn't it?
It very well could be. Ba-dum, boom, ba-da, boom. All right, so Bloody Mama. Oh, I can't tell you how much I fucking hated this film, man.
Actually, really?
Piece of shit fucking movie. Yeah, hated it.
Really? You didn't like it?
Did you like it?
Yeah, I did actually.
Oh.
I mean, okay, I don't think it's it's first of all, it is a low budget film. That's what the Wikipedia says. Low budget film. And I think, yeah, it's pretty clearly a B movie. But, and you're probably going to roll over in your future grave when I say this, I think possibly in terms of movies we've watched recently, it's most easily comparable to Bonnie and Clyde. And I think it's a lot better than Bonnie and Clyde.
Okay. Okay. I
liked it.
I agree with you that it's closest to Bonnie and Clyde, but God, I just hated it. And it wasn't that it was low budget. It was that I thought the acting was terrible, the script was terrible, everything was terrible.
We're going to fight on this one because I thought that, I mean, okay, yeah, I don't think it's like, I don't think it's like great, but I think I pretty early on in when I'm watching this movie, and maybe this is the problem that I have with Bonnie and Clyde, which is that I expected a lot from Bonnie and Clyde. Whereas in this one, quite early on, I really decided this was going to be kind of shit. And then I was like along for the ride and enjoying it and happy, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But I think it's quite a roller coaster of a movie. It's not just them sticking up banks for 2 hours like Bonnie and Clyde is. It's got some weird dynamics, interesting things. De Niro's in it. He's so damn young. There's some problematic parts, but it's a pretty gangster movie. You got to admit, they're a rough, tough and gang of people. The Barker gang, they're getting shit done. It's pretty violent.
There's certainly a gang. Well, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's basically based upon, and the disclaimer at the start of the movie, in fact, says any similarities with Kate Parker and her family are entirely intentional. So it is based on Ma Parker, historical figure from the sort of Public Enemies era where the FBI was starting and, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, John Dillinger, that sort of era, the 20s and 30s. But it's basically about this woman who is raped at the start of the movie by her father, and then swears that she's going to have some sons, and then does, and then they have this sort of Oedipal, sort of fucked up family where she's sleeping with some of them, kind of, and basically being a matriarch as they sort of rape and steal. That's the movie. And there's no plot.
Yeah, there's no plot. But it's about the dynamic between them and Herman, who's one of the crazier ones, he marries this prostitute, basically. Robert De Niro's character is addicted to opium or heroin or whatever it is that he's on. One of them, I think he's gay, and he meets a guy in prison who comes along for the ride as well.
And then she sleeps with him too.
Yeah, exactly. She sleeps with all of them, and it's weird. And there's one part where they show a picture of a lynched man, which I thought was very strange and
unnecessary
for a movie to do. Unnecessary, but you know, she's from the South or whatever. She's racist. And basically, they do the crime, and in the end, there's a big old shootout, like always. But she gets the last shots, the last say, old Kate Barker. So she's a matriarch. She's a role model.
I don't think she's a role
model. Maybe not a role model.
But she reminded me a little bit, and this isn't negative, so you'll be happy. She reminded me a bit of Smurf Cody in Animal Kingdom. That sort of weird relationship with her sons that she had.
The mother.
The Jackie Weaver character, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I do agree with that. It was a bit like that. It may be in a bit of a weirder way, but yeah.
Oh, certainly much weirder. Something else that I liked was the song at the start about Bloody Mama and
the
story.
Yeah, the song was great.
People don't do that very much anymore, like have a song at the start of a movie sort of telling you the story. And I quite liked that. I thought, oh, I'm going to like this. And then I didn't. And there was this weird through line through some of the scenes where the older brother got really weirded out when he saw someone that had like blue eyes, because they're paws eyes. I can't shoot him if he's got paws eyes. What am I supposed to do? Just fuck off. That's what I thought. I'm not going to be very coherent.
That was actually probably the biggest plot line of the movie, was that she takes them away from their father when they're young. They go off on this crazy rampage of life. In the end, where they're trying to make the most money in this big ransom hostage thing, she says to kill the guy. They can't kill him because he's got Pa's eyes. And ultimately, then Herman turns against her because at the end of the day, she took him away from their daddy, and they weren't happy about that. They love their Pa. So it's kind of this weird, interesting little dynamic between their mummy's boys, but then they kind of resent her because they took them away from their dad. And I mean, there's a lot going on there. You can't say this movie doesn't have some deep thought and ambiguous sexuality and weird. I mean, this is 1970 and they've got interesting relationships going on, I guess.
Well, that's the thing. They've got very interesting relationships, and there's a lot of deep stuff that's touched on in this film but isn't dealt with well or very skillfully or thoughtfully. It just is like, here you go, deal with this. I won't even give you a very dynamic scene. We'll just be sitting around talking, and then someone will – then the next scene is them at a shootout. It's like, what?
It's not very well resolved, I guess, in any way, any of the plot points.
And I thought at some points, is this film like a scathing indictment on Southerners, like white racist Southerners, I mean? Is it a scathing indictment on the religious South of America? But then the film didn't do enough to say what they're doing is wrong. It just kind of, and I guess that's part of the sort of film it is, but I don't know. I just sort of, I hated all the characters. None of them had any redeeming qualities, but the film didn't show me that, if that makes sense.
I think you're right. I think it's a good early example of a film which obviously over the next 10, 20 years became a bit of a trend in the gangster movie world, is the glorification of it all, because they are kind of, the film serves to kind of glorify this gang more than anything, I guess, like Scarface later does, or Goodfellas or whatever. It's not like some of the early gangster movies that we watch and we think, oh, this is actually quite an interesting take, and the message of these movies is don't be a gangster. Whereas the message of some of these later movies is, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Yeah, that's true.
So, it's kind of fits in between the two in a funny way and shows the shift, especially after something like Bonnie and Clyde, where we talked about the new wave of Hollywood. You know, this follows on from that, I think. But it has a lot of problems. It's not necessarily a well-planned movie. But I think it has some great car chases. I think it has really great car chases.
The car chases were when I started sitting up and going, okay, I'm interested now.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, even that scene where they take the women hostages, and I think in any other film I would have really enjoyed that. That one sequence, I mean. Because that was quite a good sequence where they take the hostages and put them on the side of the car, and then there's a car chase, and then they ask the women to remove their clothes so they can get away. And Ma explains that they're not sex perverts or anything. They just want it to be harder for them to be chased or for them to run away. But I thought that was an interesting scene, but given all the other abhorrent, disgusting things that has happened in the movie, because Ma Parker isn't a sympathetic character, even though the film literally starts the way it does with that kind of very uneasy rape scene, even though they don't show it, but obviously the implications are there. But then it doesn't do a good job of explaining, you know, why that means that Ma Parker's the way she is. and why that experience means that she's such a you know, violent towards her family. I mean, obviously, if you say it like that, it's like, well, of course, it just should make sense. But the film doesn't really tell you that. And the film doesn't really tell you that it's her at the start either. It goes straight from that scene to a scene where she's confronted by the sheriff about her own sons committing some sort of discretion against the girl. And you think maybe that was that scene. Like, it's, I don't know. It was just very clumsily put together, I thought.
Yeah. No, it definitely was. It definitely was. And I guess that's, you know, that's my point. I think early on in watching the movie, I decided that it was going to be a bit weird and shit. And maybe that's why I then enjoyed it, because I lowered my expectation almost instantly on this one.
Yeah.
What did we should talk a little bit about De Niro. What did you think about De Niro? Because this is an early performance for De Niro, and he pops up in so many of our beloved movies.
I didn't think he was great. I think he was beautiful to look at. That bone structure and his hair. Oh my God. Little Bobby. But I don't think he was great. He didn't have a lot to work with, to be frank. But I don't think he was excellent. But I'll tell you what, Roger Corman, the director, had worked like in the actor's studio, and he's an actor himself, actor, producer, director. And he was heavily involved with the actor's studio, as was Shelley Winters, who plays Ma Parker. And so many members of the cast, particularly the sons, were just cast out of people at in the actor's studio, like Bob De Niro or the guy that plays the main son. What was his name? Sorry. Herman.
Herman.
Don Stroud, who he was part of the actor's studio. I think maybe Bruce Dern was as well. Anyway, so they're theoretically quite good actors, and maybe it was the framing, maybe it was the way it was shot, but I don't think any of the performances in this movie were good. I don't think all of them were bad, but they weren't good.
I think it's interesting because it's basically impossible to watch this movie now and watch De Niro and not just, you know, he almost has an aura because you know it's De Niro. You know what I mean? It's like you can't watch it like if you were watching that in 1970, you would have no idea who that guy is, basically, and it would have just been like watching any of the other guys. But it's, you know, interesting to go back and sort of now watch him. And I think you're right. I don't think he's amazing. But he is, I guess, stereotypically De Niro, even at that point. He kind of has this kind of attitude and sometimes, you know,
he's certainly charismatic.
His expressions, and he's charismatic.
I saw a review online for the movie that said that the poster is the best part. And I have to say, I agree with that. That poster is really something.
It's a great poster. You're right. It's a great poster. There's a great song. I'm just looking at Roger Corman's filmography, and he has produced and directed a lot of movies.
He's got like 400 production credits.
Yeah. There's one of them that I really want to see called The Saga of the Viking Women and Their Voyage to the Waters of the Great Sea Serpent. I mean, doesn't that sound great?
It certainly sounds interesting.
It's strange that this guy who's done so much before this movie and done so much after this movie, strange that this movie kind of exists, this weird kind of low budget, you know, like you'd think at this point in your career, you'd make something a bit more well fleshed out and a bit more professional in a funny way.
Mm. Well, and there's those weird sort of little bits where it cuts to stock footage and like you said, kind of dark imagery of lynchings, etc., with this voiceover from Ma Parker that doesn't fit in with the rest of the movie. Like,
yeah.
And there's some of the great quotes from those bits. Like there's the one about, you know, because of the depression or whatever, the rich started to jump out of the windows. And as always, they landed on the poor people. I thought that was a great little quote.
Yeah, that was good. I like that. I like that.
That scene didn't fit in tonally or stylistically with the rest of the movie at all. And I wondered why those bits were there, because really most of them were there just to set them up as being racist and highly religious, which didn't make me like the characters anymore.
Yeah, and it makes you think they're trying to critique these people, but they don't really do that in the end. And I think, yeah, I think those moments, they tried to give a little bit of historical context to the movie, but that historical context had no plot points anyway. It didn't matter. It almost didn't matter what time period they were in, because they were just doing what they were doing. There was no, you know, it's not like if they were a prohibition gang and they cut to a storyline saying prohibition, no more alcohol, and then you cut to them running the old whiskey racket. You know what I mean? There wasn't any kind of direct correlation between the montages and the actual story, other than you were meant to maybe feel sorry for them, or I don't know. Yeah, it didn't make any sense.
Mm. There's one bit in one of the stick-ups where they play Simon Says. She goes, y'all know the game Simon Says? Yeah. Well, this is Simon, and she points to her gun. And then she goes, Simon Says, stand against the wall. But then she'll say, you know, put your hands up. But she didn't say Simon Says, and that really, really annoyed me. Like, she doesn't know the rules to Simon Says, clearly.
Clearly, you know? when Simon doesn't say something, you don't have to do it. Everyone knows
exactly.
That.
So that annoyed me a little bit. Another thing that I found interesting about the movie is that one of the actors' names is Michael Fox, and all I kept thinking was that he's probably the reason that when Michael J. Fox joined the Screen Actors Guild, that he had to add the J, because there was already a Michael Fox in the guild.
Wow.
I thought that must be the infamous Fox.
Is that how it works? You have to have a different name?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the rules.
I mean, Michael J. Fox is just such a good name. It's so iconic.
It's pretty cool.
It makes the name.
Well, so you know Michael Keaton, obviously,
mm-hmm.
changed his name when he joined the guild because his name is Michael Douglas.
It is too.
Yeah.
And where did he get Keaton from?
I don't know. And someone like David Tennant, his real name is something different. There's a lot of them. A lot of people will change their name, like one of the Emilys or Emmas in Hollywood changed their name because one of the other ones was taken. Yeah, Emily Stone is Emma Stone's real name.
You know what's funny about this?
What?
People like Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, the more ethnic names, they've got no problem. Mm. They just use their real name.
No, and no one's going to name their kid Al Pacino again.
No, there's no way. I mean, maybe.
Well, I guess, yeah, quite possibly. But then, yeah, so you look at the Sheens.
Charlie Sheen chose to
use his own, you know the story, he chose to use
his dad's
stage name, and then the other one was like, nah, lol.
Which makes, I mean, that's why Emilio Estevez is so fucking cool.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, I understand why Martin Sheen did it, because Ramon Gerard Antonio Estevez, I mean, back in the 60s and 70s, yeah, maybe that would have been a bit... No one would have really clung to that. But I wish he had, because Ramon is such a good name. But Martin Sheen is such an iconic name as well now. It's like,
that's true.
Oh, man, the Estevezes. How's Charlie doing these days?
I don't know. I haven't looked into it. Because didn't he have HIV?
I think maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Gee whiz. A bit of a train wreck, that guy. Like, his life sort of took a turn.
Yeah, Sheen revealed he was HIV positive. I mean, he's not acting anymore, so...
No, he tried to do that little comeback in one of Robert Rodriguez's movies, and they billed him as Carlos Estevez.
Is that he's actually Carlos? I didn't even look at that. Carlos Estevez, there we go. I'm just looking at his filmography now. There was a movie, I never saw this, called 9/11, starring Charlie Sheen. It is a true story based on the September 11 attacks. Charlie Sheen, Whoopi Goldberg, maybe he's back to normal now if he's doing a serious movie.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm just looking that up too.
It's got an approval rating of 11%.
Oh, so that's why we haven't heard about it.
Oh, is it a conspiracy movie?
Have you read the synopsis? On the morning of September 11, 2001, a messenger sings happy birthday to you to his daughter. A billionaire argues with his wife in a divorce hearing. A maintenance man begins his day. And a young Russian decides she's breaking up with her sugar daddy.
What's that got to do with 9/11? Oh, my God.
This is why we didn't hear about it.
So Charlie Sheen thinks that it was a controlled demolition. So I think this movie... Maybe it's a conspiracy propaganda movie. Maybe that's why we didn't hear about it, because it's trash. Jesus Christ.
No, but the 9/11 was a controlled demolition. So maybe we didn't hear about it because the Bush family paid to cover it up.
I'm not getting involved in any of this stuff. You're a flat earther, aren't you?
Is there any other way to be?
Yes. The world is round and we went to the fucking moon.
No, I agree with both of those, certainly.
Oh, God. Well, we definitely are derailed from the movie. Should we give it a score now? I mean, I think we've said a lot about this movie. Maybe everything we can say. One thing I did like was when he, Herman compares them to John Dillinger. I thought that was an interesting little touch where he says,
yeah.
Are we as famous as John Dillinger?
Yeah. Another bit I liked was when, De Niro was like, old lady, old lady, old lady, old lady, old lady. It's my favorite bit of the movie.
I think you're going to give this movie... this is in the book, isn't it, Jordan? You should read from the book. This is how we found the movie.
Yes, of course.
We're a real podcast.
Bloody Mama frustrates viewers expecting a pacey gangster film. Its excessive nature lies in its Oedipal plot and sexual innuendo. Yeah, that's true. No, there's nothing. It's just mainly plot stuff. But it says that we're carried to the Depression era and the rare invasion by a woman of a traditionally male-dominated territory. Not the urban space of mean streets, but a petty pastoral world populated by hoedowns, remote cottages, alligators, and assorted backwards characters. Also, do you think they really freaking fed that pig to the alligator?
Oh, God. I mean, this is the thing. It's a low-budget movie. Maybe they did. Anything goes back in those days, man. Maybe they really did feed the pig to the alligator.
Yeah. And do you think they shot the alligator? Nah, probably not. Maybe, though.
I hope not. I really hope not.
Yeah.
I think that maybe this is the biggest flaw of the movie was that this movie had a chance to have a strong female lead, which it kind of does, but... It really becomes more about the kids than it is about her, I think. And it doesn't do the female role justice as much as something like Bonnie and Clyde did in a world that is dominated by males robbing banks. It could have done more for that, I think.
I think so too. I was really wanting to like this movie based on the synopsis and the poster. I was really ready to enjoy, like, kind of like maybe a revenge film or something. But ultimately we got this dirge, this poo of a movie. And you know what? Seeing as I think it's a poo, I'm going to give it a number 2. That's the score I'm giving it.
Fuck, that's low. That's a really low score. That's the lowest. I'm going to have to give it a really high score to bump it up, because
Can you just give it what you think it deserves, Alex?
Before I give my score, I just want to harken back to this YouTube comment that I found last week.
Oh, I saw that too. Someone's taking the piss.
No, I think this guy's serious. It says, much better than The Godfather 1 and 2, especially 2, makes Goodfellas look like Mary Poppins. Pulp Fiction wishes it had the grit and grime of this multiple Oscar winner.
But it didn't win any Oscars.
Robert De Niro has stated this is his all-time best film. Spielberg calls Bloody Mama a true cinematic jewel.
Someone's just taking the piss, man.
Fuck. I'm going to give it a 6. I liked this movie. I'm giving it a 6.
Well, that means that it is equal last with The Untouchables.
I think that's pretty fair.
A score of 4.
Shit.
Which I think is pretty generous, frankly. But I'm glad we watched it because it has caught my eye the whole time since we've had this book. I thought, oh, can't wait to see this. It looks great. Looks fun. And now I'm glad I've seen it so I can stop having that false impression in my mind.
You've got closure on the movie now. You know.
If you know, you know. You know?
I think we should pick from the book again for the next movie. So should we do? I think you should just pick. I want you to just pick a movie for next time.
Pick a movie?
Yeah, your choice. A real gangster flick, a real classic that we haven't seen.
Do you want something like?
I don't want any input. I want you to do whatever you want to do. It's your turn.
Cool.
I'm such a control freak. I always have something to say. So,
all right.
Your turn.
I think I want to watch something with Humphrey Bogart in it. I've decided.
Wow.
All right, let's watch another film with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall in it. We're going to watch Key Largo.
I've heard of that movie.
Yeah, 1948. Oh, and it's got Lionel Barrymore in it, of the Barrymore family.
Oh, my. Perfect. Perfect. This looks great.
And then, listeners, we also might do an episode, if we deem it worthy, of Solo when it comes out. But we have to
Watch it. Well, that might be okay. So I'm going away for a couple of weeks. So this episode's going to come out while I'm away, and then if Solo is going to be an episode, I think that'll be the next episode probably, and then we'll watch Key Largo. If we don't want to do Solo as an episode, then we'll do Key Largo next. But there's a bit of homework for you: Key Largo and Solo, possible next episodes.
Sounds good. And as always, listeners, if you have any suggestions, just hit us up. You find us on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at thepodfatherpodcast@gmail.com. As always, I've been Jordan.
I've been Alex.
And be nice to your mums. Happy Mother's Day, by the way.
Oh, yeah, happy Mother's Day. When is that? Sunday.
Yeah, that'll be a week and a half ago once this comes out, so just ignore it. Hello.
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 Hello.